For three decades, Theatre Gale brought the Celtic arts to Atlanta up until their closing 5 years ago. But those who've missed the music and theatre of Ireland and Scotland now have a venture to look to. Arish Theatre launched in June of 2013 and is dedicated to bringing the traditions and artistry of Celtic culture to the stage. Two of the founders of Arish, Kathleen McManus and Robert Shaw Smith, paid us a visit, and Robert began by explaining their name.
Arish is spelt, first of all, A-R-I-S, and there's an accent on the I. Arish is the Irish Gaelic word for encore, and you would use it and do use it. You know, when you're in a pub in Ireland and you're at a session, there's music being played. When the piece comes to an end, you know, the company will shout, Arish, meaning, you know, give us some more, encore. And because we all participated in that Celtic theatre that used to be in Atlanta many years ago, and we wanted to revitalize that and resurrect it, we thought that Arish was a great name to sort of capture that sense of it coming back to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Atlanta's all about renewal, you know, the Phoenix and so on. So we're our own little sort of Phoenix.
Can you tell us about the reemergence of Celtic theater in Atlanta?
A few of us got together. I was contacted, in fact, by Kathleen McManus, my colleague here, and Joanna Daniel, who are two actresses that were thinking of putting together a company for women that explored the theater of England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales.
Oh, England's in there too.
Yeah, it is. It's all four countries in the British Isles.
Oh, that is so united we stand.
About 3 years ago now, 2.5 years ago, mm-hmm. we sat in Kathleen's room and we discussed what the company should be and how we should revitalize this kind of theatre so that we could tell these kinds of stories again in Atlanta. It's been, I would say, 10 years, Kathleen, since this theatre has been done in Atlanta.
Probably at least 7.
Yeah.
And we talked about it for a good year before we did anything beyond just talking about it.
Now, the great thing about this was that the group that sat in that room are all theatre people who've been working in Atlanta for, in some cases,
30 years.
North of 30 years, yeah. So there was a lot of experience in that room. And it was great to finally find get these people around the table who are really very specifically interested in this kind of theatre.
What is it about the Celtic lands that is just so rich and ripe for theatre?
You want to take that, Kath?
Well, for the most part, I think the English language unites us, although there are many language traditions in the British Isles. And the Celts have particular ways of speaking English that is so lovely in the poetry and the literature and the history within the literature. We know, those of us who study theater, that Ireland's cultural renaissance, if you will, dates back a little more than 100 years to William Butler Yeats and Lady Gregory. And the early plays by J.M. Singh and Sean O'Casey. So they kind of threw the gauntlet down, I think, in the Celtic theater world to say, we're here, and people are rioting when we put on a play. That quickly got exported, did it not?
Yeah. If you take a writer like J.M. Singh, who wrote Playboy of the Western World, which we're doing this season, he went over to the west of Ireland and listened to the Gaelic over there and then essentially sort of translated their way of speaking into English. And so the English that he writes in his plays has a very, very Gaelic music to it. Some of the sort of grammatical constructions of it are clearly not of the English language. And they're beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful to listen to. And then, of course, you've got a sort of a Scots vernacular.
I love hearing
that. We're doing a show this season. Kath is directing it. She'll talk about it.
Yeah, we're going to be doing, we're actually going to be opening our season after the fundraiser, which is coming up. Our first main stage production is going to be a play by Morna Pearson called The Artist Man and the Mother Woman, which is very new. It's just a couple of years old, had its debut at the Traverse Theatre in Edinburgh. And the Scots voice is perhaps only half as old as the Irish one. It's their tradition of modern playwriting, dates back about 50 years. And perhaps the festival, the international festival in Edinburgh, the International Theatre Festival, and then the fringe that grew out of that is largely responsible for the many voices that are now coming out of Scotland in the theatre. But it's a wonderfully comically dysfunctional story about a woman and her middle-aged son and what happens to their little household when he decides he wants a wifey. And Morna Pearson has written several of her plays in what's known over there as the Doric dialect, which is the north of Scotland.
Oh, I love it.
It's Groundskeeper Willie, it's basically what it
and
is.
Very far back in the throat for the
absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Yeah, and so we'll be doing Artist Man and the Mother Woman, opening June 5th. And then Playboy, one of the first, if you will, Celtic plays that explores that very Celtic voice in September.
Now, listening to that snippet, and it was so wonderfully musical, leads me to think these will be performed in dialect.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Good.
We wouldn't be doing them unless we were doing the accents, the dialects. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, the dialects are so delicious.
Our first season, we did a modern play by Enda Walsh, The New Electric Ballroom, which was set in the west of Ireland.
A fishing village somewhere in the northwest of Ireland.
And then we did Philadelphia, Here I Come by Brian Friel, which is, of course, set up in Donegal.
It seems that the English theatre tradition, English language theatre tradition, has really been enriched by the humour from the Irish and later the Scots. And I know there have been theories that often those peoples with the greatest comic traditions have come from oppression.
Yes.
Do you agree?
I do agree. Some of the greatest art, I think, comes out of oppression. The example that comes to mind, it's not a Celtic example, but my understanding of flamenco dancing is that the stomping comes out of a protest in the subjugation of and expulsion of gypsies and Jews out of Spain. So I think there's these world traditions of art rising out of, in whatever way possible, a protest of oppression. You know, sometimes if you can't go directly to the source, you go around the sides. But I think the English tradition itself, and Rob can speak to this too, he's an Englishman who was educated in England, about the rich tradition of English playwriting and English satire. Ground was there.
There's certainly a strong tradition of satire in England. But I was going to mention a writer like James Joyce, you know, was well aware that he had taken the English language, a language that had been given to him by the English invaders, and he bettered it. He'd done more with it than the English themselves had ever managed to do, apart from maybe Shakespeare. And when
English is very flexible that way.
Yes. But, you know, when you think of how Scots and Welsh have handled, and the Irish have handled the English language, it's clear that they're coming out of their own traditions of words, Seamus Heaney's phrase, word hoard. You know, they have their own word hoards that they bring to the English language and their own expressions. And it's enormously enriching for the English language, you know, beyond the country of England itself.
And of course, the culture that also comes along with that enriching of the language. I grew up in Chicago during the first Mayor Daley's reign, and he always liked to boast that Chicago had more Irish than any other city except Dublin. To wish someone the luck of the Irish was so ironic. And where did that come from, Kathleen? What's with the luck of the Irish?
You know, I don't know, but it maybe break a leg is part of that tradition, too.
It's, irony, you know, once more.
Irony once more. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, in resurrecting Celtic theater in Atlanta, what is your ultimate goal? If you could have that leprechaun come along and sprinkle whatever it is that you need to make it all happen.
Well, the first thing we want to do is create another space for theater. Atlanta has a pretty good tradition of theater, but it is not stable, I think. You know, theater companies are coming and going, and, you know, we want to create a company that the city can really get behind and support. Secondly, there is, you know, clearly in Atlanta, you know, people of the heritage of England, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, and we want to be a place where they can explore their culture or their parents' cultures or, their heritage. It's really, it's important that they are connected to that, and we want to be a part of that, artistic environment for them to explore that. You know, one of the things we want to do, for example, in the next couple of years is the pantomime, the British pantomime.
Really?
Yeah, we would love to do that.
Can't do that on our air.
Well, in the English tradition, the Brits have a different definition of panto than we do. You know, the classic definition of pantomime is gesture and mimicry in a silent storytelling in a silent world. But of course, the English, they threw that definition away. It's something else entirely.
So
in England,
if you say panto in England, you mean something very, very specific.
Very specific,
which is the story of Cinderella or Aladdin.
Or Jack and the Beanstalk.
And the central character is a man in drag, and he
or the central villain often.
Yeah, the central villain,
the antagonist,
and he is a man who is extremely funny, extremely flamboyant.
Dame Edna.
That sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And what he does is that he has a script, but he's so confident on stage that he interacts with his audience, or it could be a woman, you know. A different character who is a woman, but they interact with the audience in such a way that the audience is very much a part of the theater. If you think of, the Globe Theater, where Shakespeare's audience really interacted with what was going on stage. You know, we get in British pantos, we get, you know, families all coming to see the show, and they're bellowing at the stage.
It's their Christmas tradition.
Yeah.
You take a nursery rhyme or a fairy tale, and which has embedded in it, you know, the conflict of, you know, the protagonist rising above whatever's keeping him or her down. Mm. And they're the characters and the plot's very recognizable because it's coming out of these nursery tales, these fairy tales. And you take the notion of the antagonist and turn it on its ear so that it's comic. So the wicked stepmother is a great big guy in drag. Mm. And the audience is yelling, "He's right behind you!" You know, and
but the extraordinary thing about these plays is that it actually gives, particularly children, they suddenly find a voice in the theatrical space. They're sitting in the audience, and they're suddenly so engaged in what's going on that they actually become part of the performance. And it's a really powerful experience for children in particular.
And they happen all over the British Isles. They happen in England,
in
Ireland,
every
Scotland,
local
theatre. Wales.
Local companies are putting these on, yeah.
And Georgia, with its roots as an English colony, you know, we think it's high time that Atlanta had a panto to add to the wonderful pantheon of Christmas stage traditions. You know, we've got a great ballet doing Nutcracker. We've got a wonderful Lord D. Theater in the Alliance doing a Christmas Carol every year, and everybody else's iteration of a Christmas Carol. Surely there's room for a new Christmas tradition that's actually part of a very old, ancient Christmas tradition.
And one that so many of our Atlanta residents connect to.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
and would love. I mean, that's just one example of the kinds of things that we're trying to do. What we are, our basic mission is, you know, bring classic, you know, plays from that part of the world here, but also bring new stuff. You know, what is the new stuff that's coming out of the British Isles? And, you know, let's get our audiences up to date.
Our tagline is something old, something bold, stories well told.
It is not only St. Paddy's, but the first day of spring, the vernal equinox, is practically upon us. And what will be your rite of spring for Arish?
That's a nice way of putting it. Well, we are putting on over 2 days, we are putting on what we're calling Celtic Shorts. And these are four plays, one out of England, one out of Scotland, Ireland, and Wales. So these are four very short plays that we're going to put on Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd of March. And we're putting on Stopover by Gary Duggan, Park Life by Alan Harris, Ramallah by David Grieg, and The 15-Minute Hamlet by a very recognizable name, Tom Stoppard. And that last play is an absolute scream.
And you can purchase tickets by going to our website, which is arishtheatre.org, and that's ArishTheatre.org.
Do we get to hear the whole soliloquy or in the 15-minute Hamlet, or is it just to be?
Lois, you've got to come if you want to see. You've got to come.
Okay. Shakespeare's in good hands with Tom Stoppard. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Arish's Theatre, Four Play Festival, the number four play festival, takes place this Saturday and Sunday. We have details on our website, wabe.org/citylights.